Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Friday to all of you. It is Friday. There are sports. Things are good. What's going on? Appreciate you making the show a part of your day. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 o'clock. My name is Sean Pendergast. His name is Seth Payne. Seth, how late did you hang with our sports teams last night?
I don't even remember. I was in and out on the Rockets. I kept fluttering, and I was like, okay, there's 7 more 3-point attempts. Okay, all right. Did the Lakers realize that they should double team James Harden at some point? No. Okay, all right. It's one thing. It's interesting, and I know the matchups are different and whatnot, but the Blazers have the good sense to double team James even when Russell Westbrook is on the floor. Where with the Lakers, apparently, it's just like, oh, Anthony Davis, he's awesome, right? I heard that he was awesome. They made a big deal out of his brow a long time ago, so he's probably just as good. We'll go. No. Anthony Davis is going to turn the ball over 78 times, and he's going to give you how many points did he even end up with?
I'm not sure how many points he wound up with. I know, I've never been a big, like, Anthony Davis as one of the top five players in the league guys, like some have. He put up a lot of numbers for a lot of mediocre teams in New Orleans. I think he's a really good compliment for LeBron, and I think they may have tapped into something with him as a very versatile and big number two for a guy like LeBron. But when I heard LeBron was out last night, I'm like, and even with Russ out, I'm like, well, the Rockets are winning this game. Like, Anthony Davis as the sole star on a team does not scare me, but Anthony Davis as a two to LeBron is very, very scary. But LeBron out with the groin, Russ out with the quad last night, but the Rockets do get a win. They made it interesting in the fourth quarter. The Lakers cut it to five at one point, and then the Rockets just chucked in a few more threes and kind of put them away.
I think the most encouraging thing about the small ball lineup that we've seen now in the second go-round is that, at the very least, when the Rockets do want to play defense and they are playing with energy, they're capable of doing all the things they need to do. They're not going to out-rebound good rebounding teams, but they can limit the second chance points on those offensive rebounds, and then they can create turnovers. So they can make up for their lack of length with energy and speed and the ability to switch. And like we've seen out of James Harden the last couple games, look, yes, James Harden is a good post defender. We know that he can do that. But I think it's a matter of when he's engaged and doing it consistently versus really good teams, it's going to make the difference. When you're playing small like this and you have to switch everything, Harden's ability to man up on bigger dudes is really, really important. And it's going to end up – I'm just warning you right now, you're going to get annoyed during the playoffs. Every single time it happens in every series, the commentators are going to say, well, look at that. James Harden actually, he's actually manning up on Jokic, all right, though. Oh, that's impressive. And they'll act surprised every time, even though they've seen it routinely.
Yeah, no, national guys will be exposed for how little they actually watch some of these games, for sure, like it happens every year. Russ didn't play last night. Here's Mike D'Antoni following the game with an update on Russell Westbrook's health.
We're hoping. I don't know what they've listed or whatever, but I think he has a real good shot at being ready. Now, having said that, we're not going to push him. He's going to be completely well, or he'll set a little bit more, but we're hoping for Sunday.
Yeah, so the Rockets are 3-1, and the hard part of this 8-game stretch back in the bubble, Seth, is over. They've played the Bucks and the Lakers. The games from here on out are the Kings on Sunday, and then they've got back-to-back afternoon games this coming week, which I can't wait for, between the against the Pacers and the Spurs, and then they close out against the the Sixers. So the hard part, I say the hard part's over. The Lakers, on paper, looked like a really hard game, and then LeBron's out, and it, you know, the calculus changes on that. So, Russ, take your time, man. Like, whatever, the Rockets are pretty firmly embedded in a seed where it's, you know, with no home court advantage in the bubble, nothing really changes very much. So the primary thing isn't, we got to go win these games. The primary thing is making sure Russell Westbrook is ready for the middle of August.
Hey, Sean, can you answer me what might be a really stupid question?
Sure, I'll try.
Me, I can't figure it out. Why exactly are the Kings in the bubble?
Because they had a mathematical chance to get into the postseason, to get into that play-in.
It was as simple as that.
Same reason Phoenix is in the bubble.
Mathematical chance. Yeah. All right, okay.
Yep.
For some reason in my mind, I had turned it into a more elite thing than it was.
No, they're in the bubble. Now, of course, they had the player who left the bubble to go get takeout. They had a positive COVID test heading into the bubble. They were one of those teams like, they were one of those teams where I was asking the same question. You were like, why are we letting these people in again? Like, I don't think the Kings even want to be around. I don't think they wanted to go to the bubble.
It's like the NIT tournament for the Kings.
Right.
They're like, oh, it's just fun to be here, I suppose.
Yeah.
Not going to take it too seriously, but if it works out, then hey.
Do you think the Kings have more fun playing in their games or watching other games?
I did the bad thing, too, where I said NIT tournament, which is like saying the National Invitational Tournament.
Yeah.
Tournament.
Yeah.
That's the second dumb thing I've done in 45
Way too
seconds.
Early in the morning for me to get you on that one.
Yeah, I bet they're kind of like, wow, it's just cool to be around all these great athletes. Whew.
Yeah.
I saw James Harden in the elevator.
I ran into Russell Westbrook.
Did you see? I was.
De'Aaron Fox is getting autographs in the lobby of the Grand Floridian.
The guy's on the phone with his wife. I'm at the omelet bar and I'm behind LeBron James.
She's like, you two are an NBA player, honey, just so you know.
Show him a picture of me, honey.
Right. So, Seth, maybe the fact that we let in with the Rockets, I think, is probably a defense mechanism for not wanting to get to the really tragic thing last night.
Who, Sy Snead? Let me tell you a three-part story.
Let me tell you a story about a man named Snead.
Yeah. He's got three hummingbirds living in his beard. Tall as a mountain he is.
Oh, so the Astros
sucks at baseball.
Well, Ryan Presley, you know, it's funny, before the game, Dusty Baker was talking about Presley, and he's like, yeah, Presley's coming up to me asking me if I still know that he's on the team, and, you know, are you ever going to put me in? And Ryan Presley is still trying to get an out. As of right now, he got no outs last night. He was brought in to close a game that was, for the second time this year, the Astros hit a late home run on the road to take a lead. Springer against the Angels over the weekend, and now Bregman last night hits a two-run home run. That was great to see. But then Ryan Presley comes in and doesn't get a single guy out. Now, some of it was bad luck, a little squibber base hit, put runners on first and second with nobody out. But after that, it was a lot of really good contact against Presley. Here's Baker, though, Dusty Baker, after the game saying Presley's stuff was fine.
They hit some pretty good pitches. And, you know, we're all surprised that they didn't, when they had second and third, it was a possible bunt situation. And he's popped one through that hard infield. That was a double play ball. But, you know, the one that hurt was a walk, probably. You know, the leadoff walk, those always used to come back to haunt you. It was, you know, he was throwing the ball well. I mean, he was throwing the ball real well. It was, that was a tough one to lose.
Yeah, those are the ones that linger, you carry with you. And the Astros have no time to wallow. They play the A's. And what all of a sudden, 12 games into the season, is a huge series this weekend, Seth, a three-game set.
The A's are Nazis. This is a battle against evil right now.
Clear.
A lot of people are wanting to try to paint out the Astros as the demons. You got A's coaches out there giving the Hail Hitler.
Ryan Christensen gave a Hail Hitler sign in the high five line after the game. So the Astros, I guess the Astros.
Oh, I didn't realize what I was doing. Like, yeah, okay, that's usually what I do whenever like a widely recognized emblem of hate and destruction, when I accidentally flash one. Yeah, yeah.
It was a disturbing visual. Yeah. But back to the
I remember when I accidentally mowed a swastika in my yard.
Yeah.
Oops. That's on me. Bad idea. Yeah.
So the Astros lose last night to the Arizona Diamondbacks. I didn't have a problem. On the postgame show last night with Landry Locker, a lot of people had an issue with Dusty bringing in Presley. I don't know who else you bring in that situation. He got hit. And Presley is the guy you bring in with no Roberto Osuna. The guy's only pitched one other time this year. He's been resting for this particular situation. And if I'm Dusty, I'd bring him in again the next time there's a save opportunity, because you've kind of emptied the chamber at that point. You'd already used Blake Taylor, who's your really reliable reliever at that point. Seth, to me, the big stories coming out of last night, other than the Astros losing, Brandon Belak was really, really good. So we've got a Javier Belak sort of exacta going right now with rookie pitchers. It feels pretty good. George Springer injured his wrist.
Yeah, that was making a George Springer-type play in the outfield. Yeah. And we just which yielded Miles Straw in center field, which has turned into my favorite horror story. And I think the other thing, too, is if you just look at the team batting stats right now, things are starting to look more like what you'd expect just by OPS alone. You know, George Springer slightly above average now. Alex Bregman's up at an 818 OPS, slightly above average. Jose Altuve has woken up, and I think I'm never going to get too overly exuberant in predicting the end of a slump, but it sure looked like old Jose Altuve last night.
Yeah, they've all had moments recently, and that's a good thing.
Did you notice, too, I appreciated the commentators, the national commentators, consistently talking about how Altuve would come out of this slump because he is a great batter without ever – not that I heard – I never heard them allude to the cheating scandal with Jose Altuve.
Was their subtle way of saying – no, he'll get out of this because he's a good hitter. Is their subtle way of saying that that cheating was maybe the reason why he –
No. I'm giving a genuine compliment. They they stayed away from it. They didn't –
oh, got you.
Yeah.
Got
they
you.
Just flat out said, look, he's a great pitcher. They didn't have to give an asterisk or anything on the fact that Jose Altuve can hit baseball.
That's good. Good for them. The biggest question surrounding Brandon Cooks – we got an emphatic answer from the wide receiver yesterday in his session with the media. We'll let you hear it next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Good to be with you on a Friday. Brandon Cooks met with the media yesterday, and I liked Brandon Cooks. I came away liking him. I came away really gaining a pretty good understanding of what Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby see in Brandon Cooks, at least from a personality standpoint. The biggest question with Brandon Cooks heading into the season is, can he stay healthy? Can he avoid concussions? He's had several concussions over the last couple of years. Here is Brandon Cooks when asked if he's worried about his concussions.
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, I'm not worried at all. If there's any hesitation or worry, you know, I wouldn't be here right now. But, you know, I at the end of the day, things happen in this game that, you know, you wish don't happen. But when you start to learn through this process and you really start to get an understanding on what this is, there's so much out there that people just don't understand that goes into it. Everybody think, oh, it's just impact. And, but without going into specifics, I'm comfortable and I feel great and I look forward to continue to just, you know, do what I have to do and go out there and give it my all.
So people who get into debates about Brandon Cooks, Seth, when it comes to the concussion stuff, because his numbers were down last year, but his numbers were not down because he missed a bunch of games because of concussions. He only missed two games with the Rams the last couple of years. His numbers were just down because the Rams changed the way they did things offensively last year because they had some issues along the offensive line and Jared Goff wasn't as good as he was the previous year. A number of other things. So I'm optimistic about Brandon Cooks. Whenever Brandon Cooks gets brought up and these concussions get brought up, people who sort of counterpoint concern point to the small number of games that he missed, and even Cooks himself there. And even O'Brien, as he's been asked about, he's been asked about Cooks' concussions in some of these media sessions, they've almost alluded to Brandon Cooks' concussions like they're a different type of concussion almost. You know what I mean? Like, Brandon Cooks is being somewhat cryptic there, and he's saying, like, I don't want to go into too much of the details, but I'm not worried at all. It's almost like because his concussions were, you know, he'll bring up that they were ones where his head hit the ground. It wasn't because a player waylaid him on a crossing route. That somehow these concussions are different than other concussions.
Well, there's I've heard kind of whispers or people have alluded to the fact that, I don't know if misdiagnosis is the right word, but there was something about the concussions last year where there seems to be more than meets the eye. Okay. So whatever that's worth, I don't know. And almost to the point where, I don't know, maybe it was something else or maybe there, I whatever it might be. Yeah, I know what you're saying, Sean. And I think, like, people have been trained now to realize, okay, you can't call something a minor concussion versus a major concussion. Every single one is different and you don't quite know. It is worth pointing out that you do have to specifically say concussions, because I do hear people with Brandon Cook say, well, he's got health concerns or he's injury prone. He's played the most games as a wide receiver in the league since 2015. Nobody has played more games as a wide receiver since 2015 as Brandon Cooks. He's only missed two games in that time. So other than his concussions, he's been remarkably durable. And I would include those concussions, too. Even sure. through those concussions, he's come back and played. So I think the concern is the frequency with which he's had them over the last couple calendar years.
Yeah.
He's starting with the Super Bowl a couple years back, when he was with the Patriots versus the Eagles. That was the big hit.
Yeah.
And then the next year he had a couple. And I guess given what happened with C.J. Fedorowicz here, where C.J. Fedorowicz retired early because he just kept getting concussions, and he just got to that point. Or look at Troy Aikman, any of these guys, you worry that once you've had a couple that they start coming more frequently.
Yeah.
So I wish he – so I don't know. I don't know what happened last year other than to say there seems to be more than meets the eye, and it's nothing that I've ever seen. Nobody's ever shown me something that I could go out and just report on or anything. But I think there's more than – it's more than just Brandon Cooks being in denial that he's saying that I'm not too worried about concussions.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, Seth. Like, it hasn't – between the team and Brandon Cooks – It hasn't just been your garden variety, no, I'm not worried. Not the, you know, the bravado football, no, I'm not worried. It's been a legitimate, it feels like a legitimate, without going into detail, I have a lot of reasons to not be worried. So hopefully that's the case. Hopefully that's the case and he stays on the field, because obviously he's very important to what this team wants to do. Brandon Cooks has had one of the more important career, or more, not important, but interesting, I should say, career arcs in the NFL. This is his fourth team since he entered the league, and he's a good player. He's had 4 1,000-yard seasons. Now, typically when he's been traded, it's been for very good draft capital, 2 times a first-round pick, and then with the Texans, a second-round pick. Here's Brandon Cooks yesterday on moving around a lot and how it's been a blessing.
It's been a blessing for me. You know, one of the things that I reflect and look back on when I have time is, like, you know, I've been blessed to play with, you know, special teams, special quarterbacks, and great coaches. But at the same time, they had the blessing of playing with me as well. You know, so when it comes to the success that I had throughout the league since I entered, I just plan on continuing to do that. And things that I can't control, I keep out of my hands, and I just continue to focus on the grind and being the best teammate and best player that I could possibly be.
All right. So, Seth, my big takeaway yesterday from Brandon Cooks and David Johnson was I can see what O'Brien and Easterby see in these guys. If the culture they're trying to create is the one they talk about, the tough, smart, dependable, like I can see just personality-wise why they like these guys. They're very humble and deferential.
This is one
even though Cooks did say they got to play with me too. That was funny.
That's right. My other takeaway from Cooks and David Johnson was that those guys did not miss any workouts.
No, they're yoked.
Those guys. Well, Brandon Cooks is always shocking because he's so fast that you just assume he's a little wiry dude, but he's thick. I mean, he's built well. And you can see why, except for his brain bouncing around inside of his skull with the 5 concussions he's had. Reported to have had, that he's durable otherwise. It's a shame that he's so thick and durable. And David Johnson now hasn't been all that durable. He's had a lot of minor injuries. Oh, one other thing, though, Sean, about the tough, dependable, smart thing.
Sure.
Easterby and O'Brien need to get on the same page with that and get the acronym right.
Hmm.
Because – or, get the order of the words right. Because they used to say smart, tough, dependable, and then I think they realized that, like, oh, that's STD.
Yeah.
So they switched it. But now sometimes O'Brien will say dependable, tough, smart, and Easterby will say tough, dependable, tough, smart, dependable.
Yeah.
I need an acronym that I can just say TDS or something like that. Tough, dependable, smart. Touchdowns.
I like that too. It's their branding. If it's going to be your branding, it's got to be the same order every time. They have little JPEGs that they attach to some of their social media with the 3 adjectives on it.
I wonder, you know, O'Brien loves Kirk Ferentz there at Iowa, and their mantra is tough, smart, physical, I think.
Oh, okay.
TPS. And I don't know, like, I guess he probably might want to distance himself from the Iowa program for just a little bit, given
that would
what
probably
they're going
be
through right now.
Yeah,
but Yeah, that's so that's my one request. But I will say, yeah, all these guys between Randall Cobb, David Johnson, and Brandon Cooks that we've seen over the last couple days, you get it. You understand what O'Brien sees from them on an intangible standpoint. These guys are veteran leaders.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I have no idea if it's going to work, but I see what the plan is. I have no idea if the plan's going to work, but there is a plan. That I do know.
Yeah, his plan is, and let's leave DeAndre Hopkins out of it, but just in general, in terms of the guys he wants to bring in, he's got a no jackass policy.
Right.
I'd prefer to have guys in here who aren't jackasses. And I'm not calling DeAndre Hopkins a jackass.
Right.
I'm just talking about, like, okay, let's look at the guys he's bringing in and what kind of guys are they.
Someone asked on the text page, what games has Hopkins missed since 2015? He missed two games in Week 17. He didn't play in a couple of weeks 17, so he's probably tied with Cooks, I guess, in least number of games missed over the last few years.
Right, but in terms of games played, the stat I cited, I think, includes playoff games.
Oh, okay.
So, because he's
Cooks.
He's had deeper playoff runs, right?
He has.
He's gone to the Super Bowl twice.
He's been to two Super Bowls with two different teams. Yep. All right, we're off and running on a Friday. The Astros do lead MLB in one of the more remarkable categories that we learned yesterday. We'll let you know what it is, and we'll hear more from Dusty Baker next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Someone said
he's not
that
easily rattled. He throws strikes, and if he loses command of the strike zone, you know, he knows how to calm himself down and get back into the strike zone. And he used all his pitches. You know, he threw a great, great ball game, but he gave us, you know, all he had.
That was Dusty Baker. Sorry, Dusty, I stepped on you there. That was Dusty Baker talking about Brandon Belak. Seth, the Astros season, I think their record is reflective of the massive swings in stories surrounding this team this year, right? They're 6-6, and the good stories are really good. You know what I mean? Like they're getting some productivity in the back end of the lineup. Javier and Belak, at least early on, have been each just a few games, but they've each been a bit of a revelation. You know, hopefully Greinke's getting some things straightened out. And then at the other end, you've got the top of the order taking kind of forever here to get going. They're finally getting going, but now Springer's hurt. Justin Verlander might be out for the year. Roberto Osuna is out for the year. Lance McCullers has an ERA of 9. Like the bad stories are really bad. The good stories, the unexpectedly good stories are actually really good. I'll throw Blake Taylor in the unexpectedly good as well. The bullpen overall with all these young arms, and Belak gave you what you needed last night. That's what to me hurts about that loss. You wasted a really good outing from a rookie pitcher who gave you 5 shutout innings.
This might start to feel, this feels like an amalgamation of 2018 and 2015, early 2000, because you've got your stars already and you know they're good, but then you've got all these young and up and coming guys, and it looks like you're on the verge. Sean, if I didn't know any better, I'd be like, wow, the Astros are on the verge of being a really good team, instead of saying, hey, they're one of the best 3 teams in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
Since that moment at the beginning of the season when we could say pretty definitively they should be one of the best 3 teams in baseball, they've lost a whole bunch of pitchers. Not just Osuna, not just Verlander, but just Urquidy not being up, Peacock being injured. All of this has turned it into a team where you're trying to figure out what they're going to be. And will this be like 2015 where all of a sudden, lo and behold, oh, they've turned into a really good baseball team?
Yeah.
A lot of it hinges on Urquidy. Belak looked good, but man, he was taken out at precisely the right time.
Yeah,
his legs were shaking. He was ready to. He's got a little bit of development to do before you feel awesome about him as a full time starter.
If you get 5 good innings out of him every time out, I'm cool with that, man. Because even with as bad as McCullers has been, and we know Greinke is hopefully going to turn into Greinke at some point, Belak should at best be your 4th starter. If you're getting, and I'm not even saying 5 shutout innings, it was 5 shutout innings last night. If you get 5 solid, you know, 5 innings of 2 runs, because that should give this lineup a chance to win most days that he pitches. If he goes out and throws 5 innings, 2 or 3 runs, something like that, you should win most of his starts. It's funny you bring that up, and we'll get to the stat the Astros lead baseball in here in just 1 second. But as long as you're bringing up, Seth, just what the Astros have looked like and kind of where they are, you know, stock market-wise right now. The futures market with the Astros, whereas I think you said one of the 3 best teams in baseball, the odds makers have backed off on that a little bit. These first 12 games, when you add in the injury to Verlander, I think, into that, The Astros are now behind the Yankees and the Dodgers. The Twins are now the number three team at 10-1. The teams that the Astros are in a bucket with at 15-1, the Braves, the White Sox, and the Rays. So the Astros have backslid a little bit in terms of, and ironically, the A's are still behind the Astros at 18-1, but they're 2.5 games ahead of them in the standings.
And I don't want to screw it up here in how I'm presenting it. At the same time, I'm incredibly impressed with so many of these young pitchers. You know, it's easy to get mad at Cy Snead because he's a relative grizzled veteran compared to these guys. If Blake Taylor scuttles a little bit, I'm still incredibly impressed with what Blake Taylor has done so far.
Yeah, I would. If you're asking me, would you rather be 6-6 and you've gotten the performances you expected out of all of your core pieces, but just these other pieces haven't done anything yet? Or would you rather be 6-6 the way they've been, the Astros, where you've gotten some unexpected performances from some rookies you didn't know anything about, and you're still waiting for the core guys to come around? I'd rather be 6-6 the way they are now, because assuming health, and we know Verlander and Osuna are both gone, but assuming relative health for everybody who's still here, they're going to, even in a 60-game season, they're going to come around. You know?
Right.
So I'd rather be that way.
And then between Urquidy and Christian Javier, those are the two big wild cards in terms of, okay, we lost Verlander most likely, it looks like, but wow, we rounded it out with those two guys. And maybe Lance finds his old curveball again at some point.
Yep. So the Astros, Forbes had an article, Seth. I think we all assumed when sports came back that the TV ratings would be really, really good because everybody was starved for sports. And if anything, this Forbes article just reinforces for me what a big opportunity was missed with baseball coming back as late as they did. I mean, they could have come back July 4th and had the entire month of July to themselves to sort of remarket their sport and reacquaint America with their sport with no NBA or no NHL being played, no football obviously as well. Forbes, in this Forbes article, the 29 U.S. best team, U.S.-based team, so not Toronto, but the other 29, their ratings are up 17% year over year for the final week of July, which was the first week of this season, a 3.66 versus last year, a 3.11. 19 of those teams are up, 10 are ratings down. There's no NHL and NBA competition that first week, so we'll see if that holds up. But leading the way in ratings increase on television for their local regional sports network. This is the ratings of, this is not ratings on Fox or MLB Network. These are the ratings of the AT&T sports nets and the Fox Sports whatevers and the Root Sports of the world. The Houston Astros, Seth, nearly double the ratings on this first week of the season, 97% increase year over year, which is pretty remarkable when you consider the fact that the Astros were a really good team last year. It's not like they were a mediocre team and they got off to a 6-1 start in that first week and people were like, hey, let's climb aboard. This is the Astros. This is a team that won the most games in baseball last year. And they're up 97% year over year.
That's encouraging given that so many people – it seemed – I say so many people. It seemed like there were a good amount of people that immediately following the sign-stealing reveal were out on the Astros and were conflicted about how they felt about them. I think everything's kind of fallen back. Maybe for the Astros it helped a little bit that the season was delayed and gave you time to – I could see there being a lot of people right now who are kind of upset with the Astros, but then when they were confronted with the everyday deluge of people piling on the Astros, they kind of had that knee jerk. Well, go screw you. Screw you guys. All right. You know what? I'm going to stand by the Astros. You can all go to hell. So it's nice. It's nice to see that. It's nice to see that response. One of our listeners has been bombarding me every morning with these texts about how ratings have fallen so drastically because of some of the social justice initiatives. And he sent me some opinion pieces on it. And I'm open to it. There's so many different factors that go into ratings. And I think for whatever reason, I think there are some people that definitely step away from sports because of that. There are other people that say they're going to, and then they don't, whatever. But at the very least, you know, give me actual facts. And so far in baseball, it hasn't been true. He sent me some opinion pieces that showed that, well, on opening day, the ratings were such, but then after opening day, the ratings went down. Like, yeah, well, that's what happens every year.
Yeah.
I think some people definitely, I mean, I've had conversations with people that I know are genuine that have stepped away from sports to a certain degree because of various social justice initiatives. There's other people that are more into sports now because of the social justice. I think at least for right now, it kind of all balances out.
I don't think you can tell yet. I think, Seth, the phenomenon that's embedded in what you and I are talking about right now, the ratings skyrocketing here in Houston because of the return of sports, I think it's going to muffle some of whatever the ratings effect is for, if there is any, for the social justice initiatives being kind of, you know, thrown into the product, turning people off. I don't think we're going to be able to tell early on because I think there's a lot of people who are just happy to have sports back and are watching sports more than they normally would because these last 4 months were so miserable, even for a casual sports fan who just likes to have an Astros game on a Wednesday night. It was nice to have a game on. You remember when the baseball was starting back up on July 24th that night or July 23rd, whenever the Yankees and the Nationals played, it was cool just to have sports back on TV. I think it's going to be a while until we know, and I say no, like we know for sure what affects ratings. There's so many things. But until we see a substantial drop-off in ratings where we can go, aha, look, like it should be this and it's this, I think that's going to be a while.
I think, boy, the teams that have suffered the most, the Mariners at minus 29%, and the Pirates at minus 26%.
Yeah, two awful
the Mariners teams. The Mariners got off to a hot start last year, remember? So that was the Mariners, an awful baseball team, got off to a hot start.
Well,
so
hold on. This is from the same week year over year. So this is July 24th through July 31st year over year, just to be clear. Yeah.
The season didn't start in July last year.
It didn't. No. There was
no
pandemic.
I can't remember.
There was no pandemic.
Are you sure?
No.
Everything's kind of blended.
No. Not even one bit.
Thank God I have you, Sean. If I were in a solo show, I'd be into my third minute of talking about how the Mariners. The Mariners had such a better strong start last year.
All these misinformed people going to the water cooler in the morning.
Okay, then. As far as that goes, though, I wouldn't look. The Pacific Northwest is the hotbed of a whole lot of unrest right this moment.
That is true.
Maybe that has affected sports viewing.
Could be.
To a certain degree.
Could be. Yeah, could be. I think if I'm trying to ask myself, Seth, okay, why are the Astros up so much year over year? Because they're number one, and it's really not super close for who's number two. They're 97%. So their ratings are basically doubled year over year. The Astros have. They've been through 12 games. Through 12 games. God, this 12 games has felt like 12 months. Through the 12 games, I don't know that there's been a team that's had more kind of juicy national-level storylines than the Astros through 12 games. You got the Verlander injury. When I think of this, Seth, I think of, okay, did I see this on the ticker on ESPN at some point? That tells me that it's a relevant story. Verlander out for the year. Osuna out for the year. The Joe Kelly throwing it, Alex Bregman. The first games after the sign-stealing scandal.
Mm.
10 rookies on the pitching staff. You know, there's for only having played not even 2 weeks. Their first game was 2 weeks ago today. All of those things that I just said have happened within a two-week period with this team.
A whole lot of drama, man. But by the way, I do have to point out, Yankees down 10%.
Oh.
Pathetic.
Oof.
Just absolutely pathetic. You got Aaron Judge out there neck and neck with Carlos Correa in the MVP race.
Yeah.
And you're just abandoning your team.
They're going to need to tap into a line of credit to pay Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, I know.
Poor bastard.
Damn Gerrit Cole. I guess I'm happy for Gerrit Cole that he's playing so well.
Yeah. Are you?
No, did that sound genuine at all?
Yeah,
I was trying my acting. Gerrit Cole, I'm upset with Gerrit Cole. I'm upset with Gerrit Cole because it was just that one interview. In a moment where I know that it's understandable that he'd be upset after he just lost the World Series and he wanted to go in. But there's just something about that interview where he's so clearly separated. You know what? He could have been upset after losing the World Series without consciously distancing himself from the team without proclaiming that he's not a member of the Astros anymore. Like, that one little, could you do us that one little favor and let us keep up the illusion that you ever cared about Houston and the Astros or anything at all?
No,
you couldn't do that. So it was the same as Chandler Parsons. Like, I love Chandler Parsons, but then he's got to take shots after he leaves. Like, why did you have to do that? Mm-hmm. You ruined it.
Yeah.
You besmirched me.
Took shots at the cleanliness of our city.
It's like if all those girls that I had told that I was losing my virginity to found out that that was a lie. They'd be like, oh, Seth, why? Why did you? I thought I was your first.
All those girls.
Sorry, Brandy, if you're listening right well, now.
And actually, Brandy may want to close her ears here, Seth, if she's listening, because this is an update on George Springer, who I know is her favorite athlete. George Springer, who hurt
did
his...
Did he lose his virginity? Damn it.
Well, he's married now, so he. Yeah, I would say
sometimes it takes a while.
Yeah, that's true. It was the timeless art of seduction. Yeah, George Springer
tantric marriage. George it's been
Springer,
2 years.
Like 2 years. George.
There's one guy I could see not holding on and waiting for 2 years for anything. It's George Springer.
No. Very frenetic, and he does things like running into walls and diving in the outfield. He hurt his wrist last night doing Springer things. He had to leave the game in the sixth inning. Here is Dusty Baker's update on George Springer.
Yeah, I don't know if he's available tomorrow or not. We'll see. But, you know, nothing was broken. It was just a wrist sprain. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, he'll be all right in a couple of days. So I'm just glad that it wasn't broken or fractured. He did it on that diving play, that fine play that he made center field. So you just got to keep on battling, keep on fighting, and it's going to turn our way. I mean, we just know that.
I didn't have a problem with Springer diving after that ball because I think it was a one-run game at the time. But I will say this, Seth. I meant to make this point last week, and I didn't. And I think it was because it happened over the weekend when they were playing the Mariners, the first series of the season. And the Astros are up 8-2, and Springer is flinging himself into walls, like knees first, torso first, into walls. It's tough getting up. I'm like, George, you're up by 6 runs on the worst team in the American League. Let the ball bounce off the wall and field it and just get it back into the infield, man. You don't need to dive for everything.
Did they say whether it was the left or the right wrist?
I don't if they did, I didn't see. So, I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
I'm trying to watch to see exactly how he landed on my glitchy internet here, but I'll update you as soon as I do. I mean obviously either one matters.
Right.
But
right.
George and Bregman are back to being, in terms of their cumulative totals for the year so far, they're back to being average batters, which means that they've actually been way above average as they fight themselves out of this. Altuve's almost up to batting 200, and it feels like he's well on his way.
Seth, that's how bad it was, is that it feels like all three of these guys have started to swing the bat a little bit lately. Like Springer, even though his batting average isn't very good, he's been driving in runs. You know, he's driven in like 11 runs on this road trip or something like that. But you look and their batting averages are all still barely 200, not even. So that's how bad it was to start the year for all three of these guys. It was really, really bad. They've started to swing it pretty well lately, and still their batting averages are pretty putrid. So hopefully Springer's okay.
My forensics on the diving catcher, I'm amazed he didn't break both wrists. So that's
Watching it right now?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
give us the lowdown here.
Okay, well he's diving. I'm watching a commercial with the voice of John Smoltz. Screw you, MLB. Okay. You know what? MLB does so many things right, but I got to watch 30-second commercials before I watch. Like between each highlight, can you at least give me like 4 highlights in a row?
Yeah.
Before you do anything?
Mm-hmm.
No,
mm-hmm.
I can't watch. Never mind.
Okay,
never mind.
Okay, so Springer hurt his wrist and we'll see if he's back. Shifting gears, the Texans brought somebody in yesterday, Seth, that I think has you a little bit concerned about one of the other Texans on the roster, but Brandon Marshall, who would
be the linebacker, who
would be the second defensive player they've signed that has a name of a receiver. You go, whoa, huh? Because they also have Michael Thomas on their team, but he's
that's
a safety.
Right,
yeah, they have the other Michael Thomas. This would be the other Brandon Marshall, the one who probably played his best football as a Denver Bronco.
Gosh, I hope O'Brien understands that they're not the same people.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you try to be the head coach and the general manager. Sometimes the paperwork gets shuffled
around.
It's like, oh, well, Brandon Marshall's available? I didn't even know he was still playing football. let's bring him in.
As long as they don't bring in like an accountant named Julio Jones or something like that.
That would be the worst, is if O'Brien thought, not only confused the two, but still tried to bring in Brandon Marshall, the receiver.
Because true.
Wait a second. Wait, was he good in 2016 still? That's the
key.
Was
year.
He still playing in 2016?
I'm going to go check.
So Brandon Marshall comes in. My only one concern here, and they brought in another linebacker last week also, would be that Dylan Cole tore his ACL in late November. He's on the PUP currently, the physically unable to perform list, which doesn't matter because nobody's performing anything for another 2 or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. I guess my only concern would be, okay, I hope Dylan Cole is progressing as planned from his ACL surgery, because it's been, what, 8 months now since late November? That's usually enough time. I mean, you could be out playing full contact football after 8 months, usually, unless there are complications. Because I went through the same thing once where I'm always wary of this because I tore my ACL in September 1 year, and it was all I could do to come back out and play in September of the next year because I had complications. I ended up having to have 5 procedures over the course of a calendar year, and it was not a fun year. It was not a fun year. So I'm always, whenever there's any kind of hint of a delay or anything with an ACL, I pay attention to things like Brandon Marshall coming in. Don't get excited by Brandon Marshall's name, even if you're remembering Brandon Marshall, the linebacker. In 2015, when the Broncos were at the Super Bowl, he was an integral part of that defense. He was really, really good. Injuries have taken their toll, and over the last couple years, it's been pretty spotty and touch and go for him. And I don't think he took any snaps at all last year. After being injured in 2018 pretty seriously, he got injured again in 2019 in training camp. And I don't think he took any snaps last year. So this would be probably a very good value signing with a lot of upside, but not somebody that you would definitely want unless you absolutely needed him. Like, he's not going to come in and be better than Dylan Cole.
No. And just to be clear, they have not signed him yet. He was brought, I don't think we've made this clear. They brought him in to, he was in a hospital here in Houston yesterday just to get a physical. So he is not officially a Houston Texan yet. They brought him in to kind of kick tires on him a little bit.
And now he's at that point in his career, too. This is where it kind of sucks, Sean, when you start to get up there in years a little bit and you've had a bunch of injuries. You go on a free agency visit and they actually want to work you out versus, you know, it's
just assuming it's not, you're okay.
When you're your prime, or if you're Ed Reed, they just bring you in and say, like, hey,
if you're Ed Reed.
Do you have a broken hip? No? Okay, cool. And then you sign him to a lot of money, and he's got a broken hip.
And he's getting surgery in May on his hip, So Brandon Marshall was in Houston yesterday. We'll see if they sign him. I'm with you, Seth. It sounded weird that that's a player they were looking at, only because that to me is one of their deeper positions on the team. You know, with assuming Cole is healthy, that's one of their deeper positions. An inside linebacker is not a position where you go, well, you can never have too many inside linebacker. Like in 2020, the one position on defense where you don't go, well, you can never have too many of these, is not run stuffing inside linebacker.
Yeah,
that is not one of those positions.
But I can see, man, there's a part of me where Romeo Crennel, and I think maybe Weaver a little bit, and myself all share something in common, which is like an appreciation for the old school football players. Because Brandon, so many times today, these inside linebackers, they just run around blocks. Like scouts don't even bother checking to see whether college inside linebackers can stab with their hands and shed like old. They're just like, okay, can you run around like Luke Kuechly? Cool, good.
Yeah.
Like Brandon Marshall plays with his hands. He butts guys up. Like he does a lot of old school inside linebacker things, which on first and second down can still be very valuable. And if Dylan Cole does need a little bit of extra time, Brandon Marshall's the kind of guy that in this year where veteran savvy is at a premium because there are no preseason games in which to develop players, Brandon Marshall, if he's healthy, could come in and play immediately.
Yeah.
He'd pick up the scheme really quickly. He's got experience in a 3-4. He'd be just fine as long as he's healthy.
Yeah. Red flag. He was released by the Raiders over the weekend. Like, okay, well, the Raiders didn't need him. Did you see the Raiders? You remember Jeremy Hill, the running back for the Bengals?
They signed him for like 2 days.
Yeah,
right?
they signed him on Monday. And then they released him on Wednesday. He put a tweet out. It was pretty funny. He put a tweet out. He's like, well, that was fun.
Well, he probably pulled an Antonio Brown, being Jeremy Hill and all. He probably tried to punch Mike Mayock.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, there is YouTube. Yeah, you're right. Jeremy Hill has an awful sucker punch video out there of him that will be part of his digital fingerprint forever. I don't know how much he's I think he's overcome that in terms of what NFL teams think of him as a person. Clearly, they don't think much of him as a running back now because he's been injured and he had huge fumbling issues when he was with the Bengals. But the Raiders signed him for 48 hours.
So. Yeah, I got to be careful with sarcasm like that. To be clear, everybody, I don't think he actually tried to punch Mike Mayock.
No.
That was,
No.
Antonio
Brown? He did try.
Antonio Brown acted like he wanted to punch Mike Mayock. I don't know if he actually would.
All right, so we'll keep an eye on the Texans today and see if they sign Brandon Marshall, the linebacker that they had in for a visit yesterday. David Johnson was the other Texan that met with the media yesterday, and he made a bold proclamation about his role in this offense. We will let you hear it next.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.